Improv's good, and it's, you know, it's much cheaper than therapy. Culture podcast, or should I say, Seen It. Here we are with the Improv Jam legends themselves. We have Steve, Rhea, Mike, and Nick. They've been around since 1992, local legends all over the Jersey scene. Improv Jam guys, welcome to the Bob Culture podcast. Thanks for being
here. Hey. Hey. All right. Thanks for having us.
Yeah. I don't know if we're supposed to clap.
I clap. Yeah, I clap for you.
First and foremost, congratulations on 20 years. That's pretty awesome.
Thank you.
It's like a marriage.
Yeah.
In what way is it like a marriage?
Because you never know what's going to happen.
And all marriages last 20 years.
And we get kicked out of every place we've been.
Yeah. Well, I was just going to say, I've seen you guys in Red Bank, in Delmar, in Hesbury. Yeah. Back in Red Bank again. Even when I was at Rutgers, you guys came up. So that's
see?
Cool.
That's the wife.
Because you were
that's
there.
The wife doing.
That's why we went.
There it is. You guys are following me around. But that's pretty cool. I've probably been seeing you guys since I was 16. I used to go to the Internet Cafe. That was a place to be.
In Red Bank.
In Red Bank, yeah.
Now it's a, what is it?
Urban Outfitters
now.
Yeah. Is it?
Yeah. They still do improv there, though.
Yep. just the employees.
Yeah.
Interesting. But thanks for being on, guys. I'm really excited to have you on. So I always like to ask everyone the origin. What's the origin story? Did a meteor hit the earth and Improv Jam was formed? Or when did this all start?
I will I'll nutshell it for you. I was performing in Orlando down there with some of the more
Mickey,
notable improv folks.
Minnie.
With Mickey Donald. And Minnie and those guys. And I moved back up here because all my troop cohorts went to L.A., And my sister had a baby, and I said, I'm going to go home for a little while. So it was like Nathan Fillion went to New York. Wayne Brady went to L.A. Jonathan Mangum, who does the Let's Make a Deal with him, went to L.A. Claire Sarah, who wrote, like, Blended, all these writers, and Aaron Shore, who was one of the guys who was the producer of Everybody Loves Raymond and The Office and all these things. And they all went out to L.A. And I came here, and then, like, a month or so went by. I was, like, working and not doing anything, and I would call them up, and they'd be like, nobody has any gigs, everybody's living on floors, and I was like, I'm not going out there. So I approached this little theater company at the Galleria about doing an improv show, and they let me, and the first show we had nobody, and then all of a sudden the word got out to, like, high school kids, and in 1992 it just was crazy. It was 11:30 at night, and we got 100-plus people. And it was once a week. Then we got so crowded, we had to go to twice a week. Had to go to Friday and Saturday.
Right.
And then that theater closed down in the Galleria. So we moved to this place called the Broad Street Cinema. It was a little tiny cinema.
Can I say one thing about the Galleria?
He was probably a child.
I was in preschool, and I went to a birthday party dressed as Batman, and we saw Improv Jam at the Galleria.
No way.
And you guys made fun of me for being dressed up like Batman.
I'm sure it wasn't me.
I was in literally preschool.
I'm sure it wasn't me.
I'm sure it was probably
one of the more meaner improv.
Yeah, the show Lost is based on our improv troupe.
Yes.
It's all like a time
20-year connections.
So then the Broad Street Cinema was cool. It was packed Friday and Saturday nights. We would go late again. We'd go at 11:30, and then that place closed down. So we went here, the building we're in right now. Oh, no, I'm sorry. No, we went to Internet Cafe first.
Okay.
Yeah. Internet Cafe first. And that, as you know, was crazy.
Yeah.
The only downside.
Sometimes, man, high school, we came and we tried to get there early just to get a seat. Yeah.
The only downside was every scene was in front of a lake. Because it had that mural, and they wouldn't let us put up any of the black tarp or anything in front of the thing. So every scene was in front of a lake. So you had to give the suspension of disbelief.
And every scene had cappuccino being made.
Yes, right? You could really see it here.
You're taking me back.
Yeah,
crazy.
And the guy that owned it was all the money basically went to him. That was our deal. We don't have any business acumen whatsoever.
So weird.
And then we came. Then for the first time ever, we were approached by a place to move because it was starting to get a little tenuous with that guy. So we came here when Phoenix was here.
Right. Yes.
And the shows still were crazy and it was fun. It was a lot of fun. But then all of a sudden, this place, Phoenix had to leave. Because they weren't smart like we are right now, and we attach our shows to education, and they didn't. They had these productions, and they had all these things. They were building scenery, and they were doing all these things that I guess is against fire code. So we learned our lesson.
Gotcha.
So now all of our shows are attached to a class and a workshop and education because, you know, and we don't really make any money. It's donation-based and things like that. So they closed, so we went to this place, the Eatontown Playhouse.
Okay, that's just there too. Okay.
What I like to call the desperation move because we needed
three
a place.
Years maybe.
Yeah.
There.
That was interesting. It was in a strip mall. And the place.
Next to a dentist.
Next to a dentist. And now is a.
A massage place.
Yep, and a massage place is in the same radio town on 35.
So that was the massage, and then you were the happy ending.
We were the happy ending. Improv's always the happy ending.
We were competing with local theater. They would make us wait to get ready for our show because they were like shuttling like 40 people off a stage. And
yeah,
they're
community
all like
theater.
Tinier and more dressed up than the next.
And they wouldn't. It was
always in costume.
And they would have scenery, and they wouldn't let us like touch anything at all.
It was like couch prov.
There was a couch.
Nice
and said,
living
well,
room.
We can move this. You know, we get it off the stage. We can do all these things. And we weren't allowed to touch anything, ever. So that was weird. But then I showed up there one time to teach a class, and there were bolts on the door from the sheriff. So they had closed.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Seen a lot of consistency.
That is after I had you know, already paid rent and I'd taken money from the classes, the kids I teach in classes with, and I was like, okay. And nobody told me anything. Right. So then we moved to Asbury. We went to the showroom.
Seen you guys there too?
Right. Okay. And that was interesting because it was very hard. Asbury, I love Asbury, but it's not really a place for comedy.
It's a lot of drinking and music.
Music and drinking. That's about it. And restaurants.
Yep.
Yeah.
Hopefully they'll build it.
Yeah.
Yeah, see? Exactly. And everybody has. And then I started teaching at that time here at the Basie, doing a teen troupe and doing things. And then things just evolved from there. And then this space once again became open. And we... it's my phone. It's okay.
Phone.
It's all right. And then we were able to. What are you doing? We were able to attach some classes and workshops. We do those shows before our show, and then I teach classes here. And then things are going pretty well because I do a class once in a while. We're trying to get it on a more regular basis, teaching improv to autistic kids and teens. Mm-hmm. So that's a lot of fun.
That's awesome.
Doing stuff like that too. So we're really trying to expand the program. And right now, as we talk, and we're very optimistic, we have a lot of people for the show tonight, but we never know. So we're hoping that we will.
Yeah.
Everyone come out for it.
We're
kind
of like
if we don't,
DIY punk
Nick.
Movement.
That's
it's
right.
Still alive in improv jam.
That's right. It is. It's all guerrilla marketing.
There's like a bunch of places in the U.S. where comedy is in an upswing, and you know these things started in Toronto and Chicago, and
Portland probably.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, Portland's got a huge scene.
Yeah, and they're all over the place, but, you know, they're in New York City, they're in Philly, but New Jersey's just kind of, hey, guys, what's up?
And the thing is, we were the only game in town for years. There was no comedy, and everybody came to see us, and it was huge, and we were turning people away. So we want to try to get back to that. Because there really isn't any other improv. There's improv, like, some stuff in New Brunswick, and there's... you hear about things here and there, but really there's not any improv going on a regular basis. So we're trying to build that back up again.
And I also feel like improv is probably better known now than it's ever been.
Yeah.
People are like, oh, that's cool. I'd love to do that. And a lot of places around here just have no sort of outlet to do that.
When I used to bring people, and I remember, like sometimes you got too late. It was hard to like get in or get a seat or whatever. But I would tell people it was the uncensored Whose Line Is It Anyway?
That was the marketing,
And which kind of blew our minds. We always had a ball. So everyone come out to Improv Jam. You know, you guys are doing a free show tonight.
Yeah.
This is live, but you know, very cool of you guys to come on out.
So it shows how well we plan.
Yeah.
Who knows? Maybe we are doing a show
tonight.
Into
the past, you have to time travel.
Yeah. Someone
back
in the future.
We will have a show on the 17th because that's our last show for the holiday season, because the following weekend is... the pagan holiday of Christmas.
Right.
And then
make sure you listen to this podcast before Christmas.
Yes. And then New Year's Eve is the same. So we're not doing a show New Year's Eve either. So we won't be back until the first Saturday of January.
Okay.
Ooh. Yeah.
Well, everyone come to Improv Jam. It's always a good time.
Most Saturdays.
Yes. Improv Jam most Saturdays.
Non-religious Saturdays.
Yes.
When did each of you guys know you wanted to perform? You know, I'm a drummer. I play music. I've never had the desire to act or be a comedian, but I'm totally a fan. I totally appreciate what you guys do. So I guess, Steve, we'll start with you. When did you know you wanted to perform or act or study any of that?
I think it's just innate. You hear something, you see something, and you want to do that. And I think that's consistent with just about any performer. For me, it started with music, and then I just got into acting a little bit through that, through musical theater. But wanted to play in rock and roll bands and do that kind of thing, and so I did that for a long time. But then I found improv, and I found that to be like a nice blend of performing with comedy, and then I found musical improv, and that's kind of what I've been doing. So that's my short and curly.
All right, Rhea, how about you?
Gosh, it was a survival tool for me as a kid. So, I mean, honestly, you know, I had what was a very, it was a very interesting childhood, single mom type deal. And I just, you know, I realized at a young age that if I was sparky and cute and funny, that people would take me places and buy me ice cream.
Wow.
And like, that was, I mean, that was the beginning of my love affair with the, you know, the performing arts. It's like, oh yeah, hey, people are nice to you if you perform for them. So so then I went to school for theater, and then had kids and took a big break, and then started back in and did dance and music. Also did musical improv in Portland. There's a huge scene in Portland, Oregon, where I just moved from.
Oh, awesome.
And so I was involved in several troupes there, and then got here and basically kind of threw myself at Mike. It was kind of pathetic and sad. I showed up one night and just said, "What do you guys do, and when do you do it, and can I come too?" So
that's the place. That's great. I invited her to a workshop on Wednesday, and then she was amazing. And I said, "Let's just do it. Let's just jump in." You know, it was really good.
Awesome. Well, glad you're here. That's awesome. Mike, how about you? I talked about this a little bit, but
I was a fat kid growing up, and I am
a pretty fat
I'm still
kid.
A pretty fat.
you're an average size adult.
I am.
You're a fat kid.
Yeah, you know it.
Yeah.
I had like a lot of friends, but I was a kid that like even in high school would just hang out with friends and just riff and play Dungeons and Dragons, and you know, the movie the show Stranger Things was like my life.
Really?
Yeah, because I just played D&D, played D&D all the time, and like
went to the underworld.
Yeah, went down and hung out and rescued my friend from certain death.
Yeah,
which was pretty cool.
That's what we all did as kids.
Found like a weird hybrid girl. And in my mind, I did. I played music as well, and I did theater. And then went to college. When I went to college, it's funny and strange that we talk about this, because I was at a wake of one of my best friend's fathers had passed last week, and I went to a wake, and all my college friends were there. And we're just riffing. We're just talking and riffing. And all these guys are like, they own businesses, and they're like super wealthy. One guy's wife is this author named Juliana Baggett, who's like this famous author. He's just a stay-at-home dad, and they all have a ton of money, and they're just the funniest people that I know. And my improv stuff came from them, pretty much, because we would just sit there, and we would turn the volume down on the TV at night, and we would just do all the voices, and we would just do things like that. And
awesome.
That's where I learned how to do improv. So then after college, I moved to Orlando and just auditioned and started working at Disney doing improv.
Orlando.
Yeah, beautiful Orlando, Florida, where the cockroaches fly and everyone hates alternative lifestyles, but they pretend they don't.
They have lizards there.
They do.
They don't have lizards in New Jersey.
I love those lizards. But I had a lizard. I'll think of it later. But I had a lizard. You could get a lizard for your apartment that would eat the cockroaches.
Ah.
A little lizard, a little like a gecko. It was a gecko. You can get geckos for your apartment. They eat the cockroaches.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Don't they call them palmetto bugs there because it's more tourist friendly?
Yeah. They do. But they're just giant flying cockroaches.
Yeah.
It's very frightening. But
that gecko provided house insurance.
That's right.
Some way.
But then, like, after Orlando, I started teaching, and then teaching is improv. I just hit my 20th year being as an educator, so that's about the same thing.
Gotcha.
You know, it's every day you show up, and you never know what's going to happen or what's going to change in your plans. And improv is good, and it's, you know, it's much cheaper than therapy for a lot of things. As well.
So essentially, what you're saying, you live Stranger Things. You were Dustin from Stranger Things.
I was Dustin.
Okay.
Yes.
I got you. Nicholas.
Nicholas.
Let's see. I kind of grew up on a farm the first like 16 years of my life, and I would help my mom shovel horse shit daily. Like I would go to school, get homework, and like not do that homework because I was tending to horses.
I understand.
Which is like a weird problem. I don't know. Like there's definitely rich people around here, but like I wasn't rich. I just had horses, so I felt kind of like.
And they lived in a house with
a peasant, kind of. Yeah, and so I did that for like 16-ish years, I guess a little bit less, and then in like. I guess I was younger, but in like fifth grade, they were like, oh, we're going to do Annie the Musical. And if you go out and audition for this, you get to hang out at school after hours. So I was like, wow, if I do that, I don't have to take care of horses. And so I went out for Annie and I was cast as Sandy the dog. And didn't really have to learn anything, you know, no lines. I just had to like pretend to bark a couple times during the show. And people liked it. And I didn't have to shovel horse shit.
Yeah.
And I got to meet girls, which was amazing. Because, you know, I just tended to horses all the time. So all of a sudden I could like make friends and meet people. And so I stayed with theater, and my freshman year of high school, I was still like playing soccer, doing some of the like sports stuff. And after soccer season ended, I joined Tech Crew to be back in theater because I'm like kind of artistic and I paint and shit. And
two different things.
Yeah, separately, sometimes together. And so I started to drift away from the sports thing and be involved in the theater thing again. And I met a girl named Lisa that went to my high school, and she was on Tech Crew, and she was taking classes with Improv Jam with Pete Capella, who used to be a very active member back when I was.
He's a very active improviser at LA now. He's doing very well.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Great. Good to hear.
So Lisa invited me to Pete's apartment here in Red Bank one time and did a free improv class with him. And it was, like, very intimate. It was, like, me, Darren, and Lisa, maybe. Mm-hmm. Maybe one other kid. And it was just some fun little games. And it was something to do. And I definitely looked up to Lisa. I thought she was really cool. And meeting new people doing that was just, like, an addiction in a way where I just kept on wanting to meet people that wanted this same outlet, you know, awesome. find your group sort of thing.
It's your tribe.
Yeah. So when I went to college, it was kind of a choice between acting and doing graphic design and art, and I figured that could pay the bills, but I don't know, more than acting, a little bit maybe. And sometimes I still think about that, but the thing that keeps me sane, I feel like, is having this outlet still after 10 years of doing it, where I know I can come home and do some improv, and it's fun.
It's an interesting thing with people that are in improv and things like that, because they're kind of theater people, but they're not theater people, mm-hmm. because it's a whole different mindset. So when we were in Orlando and we were doing like three shows a night, we were doing 7:30, 9:30, 11:30 shows, and you're there at like 6, and you're passing out flyers and you're helping get people in the seats and you're doing all this stuff and you do the show, then you take a break between the show, but you're still like kind of on because you're out, like you see the audience come in and you're greeting them, and you really try to make that connection with the audience. That's why one of the things we always used to do, and we still try to do, is after the show we run out. And we stand there, and we have like a line of thank you people, as they leave, because it's, you want to make that connection with people.
Shout out Michael Herdson. He knew my name before I introduced myself.
Yeah.
And it was because I came to these shows like twice a week for 8 weeks.
And you get to know
nonstop
a lot of the regulars that would come to the show. And you know, and you see the and even today I see people that say, I used to come to your show every weekend and it was so much fun. And
yeah, totally.
You know, it's kind of weird. I'm sure like the scene in Portland was the same thing, you know.
Yeah, it was, you know, and the thing about Portland is that there were a lot of splinter groups. So you had, you know, you had Comedy Sports, which was the big, kind of like the long running. And then you had all of these splinter groups that did mostly long form with like an occasional short form night. And all the, it was like, you know, we all hoard around. So it was, you know, you'd be in each of these theater groups,
right,
and kind of swapping in and out. And then you got your audiences to follow you. So that scene was pretty exciting because, you know, you had this huge community of people that would kind of go from one thing to the other. And then because there was so much creative juice and interest in it, there were all these weird, like, splinter groups that would do things like nothing but musical versions of TV shows, you know. So they'd have, like, 6 weeks of Game of Thrones musical improv, yeah, and stuff like that. It was really
But there
cool.
was always an audience for that, too.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that's hard here is that it's hard to find an audience for stuff like that. I mean, ideally, we'd love to have, you know, situations where we could do more. And we used to, when we were at the Internet Cafe, we used to have off nights where we would do a show called The Trifecta, which would be, we would do a 20-minute musical, a 20-minute sitcom, and then we would do a 20-minute like movie. All based on audience suggestions. So it's very hard to do like things like that now here, because we're just trying to, again, build up the audience for here so then we can branch off. Like, we do the class shows, we do the kids shows, mm-hmm, for the education stuff, and we get people to come to that, which is good. But we're just trying to make sure that the 9 o'clock show gets super busy.
Yeah. Awesome. I was actually talking to Steve about this earlier. Something, you know, I can't wrap my head around, I guess because it's not music, but the art of improv, like creating a scene, creating a character, keeping a scene going, and staying in character. How do you guys do that? I couldn't do it.
Poorly.
Yeah.
Just, I think you have to believe. I think, I mean, that's the key. You can't, if you have an open mind to it, and you're in that scene and you're with that person, it's just like that's your life. That's your life in that 3 minutes. So if you think about it, you know, you can have a conversation or you can have an interaction with somebody for 3 minutes in your regular life. Well, your regular life in improv, you may, you know, have six arms and be from the planet Kerplutz, and, you know, and the person you're talking to happens to be, you know, a dog of Earth. And, you know, but that's your situation and that's the life for 3 minutes. And, you know, and I think that as long as you're able to mentally buy into that, you can do anything for that period of time.
You have to be willing to fail. You have to be willing to understand that you're going to bomb, and you're going to do a character that's going to bomb. But the audience is going to appreciate it if you carry it through. Mm-hmm. Like, so many times I've seen people do improv or people in classes, they'll start this character, and it's not going well, they'll just stop the character. Mm-hmm. And you can't. You have to totally take the controls of that plane as it's crashing and just like smile as you're about to hit the mountain because you know it's going to happen.
Yeah.
What comes to mind is Steve Carell in The Office where he pulls out a gun
and then
every character.
Right. That, it's like he would bail. And that was such a testament of bad, not bad, well, yeah, bad improv and bad, like people who just don't understand really how to do improv. And so as improvisers watching stuff like that, it's hilarious to see. Or anytime on TV where they make fun of improv and you see it and you're like, that's exactly true.
There's a lot of tropes.
Yeah.
I come at it kind of from an acting background and try and remember to make it funny later in a way, which seems a little backwards. But I feel like as long as you're relating to your scene partner and you're acting like you belong, the audience is willing to believe you. and they're willing to see, in a way, how smart you are, how you can kind of trick them into thinking that this thing is scripted, and like they must have thought about this beforehand, because you have the opportunity to spin some magic, and the audience wants that. They're waiting for that, and the crazy part is that they can smell fear. So if you're up here and you're bombing, everyone knows, and sometimes we're the last people to know, but the audience can watch everything that's happening and watch our subtle facial reactions and know that's not where they wanted to go, or they nailed that one.
Yeah, and you remember from back in the day where, you know, there was 120 people in there, and they're all high school kids, and they're drunk or they're stoned, they want to be entertained. And if something starts to go south, you know, you got to pull up and fix it. That's the good thing about improv and having a tight group of people, is that you can bring it together and make it better. And the improv that we did was, if something bombed, you know, you shake it off, and 2 minutes later you've got the next thing you're doing.
It's a benefit of short form.
Pick it back up,
I give you guys credit for that.
Yeah. Well, and if you bomb big, I mean, that's the thing. Commit and bomb big, you know, because when you have...
They'll respect that.
Because then they're laughing with you and not, you know, I mean, of course, they are always should be laughing at you, but for the right reasons.
Right, yes.
Not for the wrong reasons. You know, I mean, it's like you can share that moment. Like, I know I'm going to fail, but I'm going to fail. I'm going to fall hard and, you know,
I remember in Eatontown playing the devil in a scene. And then after the show, people came up to me and asked me, like, if I was okay. Like, like literally, they're like, I don't know why you would say that. And I was like, well, I was the devil in an improv scene. And they're just like, no, we've too far. I was like,
we've all said things that are just horrible.
We can't be present. We might be able to be present.
I said, it's funny, I was talking to my wife the other day. And I said, she made a joke about the 80s movie Powder. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, that just reminded me. We were doing a show. And there was a guy in the audience, it was the Internet Cafe, there was a guy in the audience who was he was very pale. He was just a jerk. He was that guy in the audience that always tries to one-up stuff that's said on stage. He always tries to one-up stuff said on stage. But not like at all. And what I do, and these guys will tell you, is that instead of me going back at them, I always try to make them a part of it in a nice way. But he was just so he was like so bad, and he was just interrupting the show.
Right.
So I said, okay. I said, all right. I had brought him up there, and he came up, and he thought it was like all funny and everything. So we did a scene where I made him Powder, that character from that movie. And I find out later that he had cancer.
Right.
So you didn't make him Powder.
Right. So I didn't make God made him Powder. But it was like, I was like, well, you know, I was reacting to what you were doing in the moment.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, exactly.
We actually get a full medical history of
everybody that comes in.
At the door.
Right, that's
sign a waiver.
Everybody that comes in, you're just like, you know.
But
there have been some times where people have just been really bad in the audience. Yeah. And I have totally found out a way to work them into the show and make them part of the show and make it fun and they walk away. But this guy was just not having it. So I just made, instead of, but I mean, I could have yelled at him. I remember this guy, Nick, was like ready to just start hammering him, yelling at him and everything. I was like, no. So I figured I'd make him into the scene. Because he was pale, I made him Powder whatever. But
I see a lot of stand-ups get heckled, and, you know, the good ones brush it off, they make a good joke on the spot.
Yeah.
But as an improv group, I could probably name 10 times the show has gotten paused, but it's never been derailed, because I think you have a group of support and you have the audience with you that is there to see an improv show, not to see Powder.
Yeah.
Right.
So
we had a great moment. We had a drunk guy that was in our audience for a show that I was doing who, when we ejected him, which we eventually had to, because he was not only loud and obnoxious, but he was loud and obnoxious like throughout all the scenes. And we finally just said, you know, listen, you know, obviously you've had a lot to drink. We're going to have to ask you to leave. And he pulled the fire alarm as he left. So here we are. Of course, we have we have to evacuate the building. And it's, I mean, it was chilly. It was September. Everybody's outside because we had to wait the, you know, appropriate amount of time to get clearance to go back in. We continued the show on the sidewalk. Wow, we just did the show on the sidewalk and said, screw it, you know, we're here, we're going to do it, you guys paid.
That's awesome.
You know, so we just did the show on the sidewalk and then moved everybody back in, and I think we probably gave everybody a bag of Skittles or something that, but yeah.
Improv is always like, I always say this, is the redheaded stepchild of theater and of stand-up, because it's like different. So like, we've done shows at the Stress Factory where he has us open for a comic. I remember one time a guy that used to be on SNL named Finesse Mitchell. He wanted us to open for Finesse Mitchell one time at the Stress Factory. So we're like, yeah. And the whole audience was black. And they were there to see Finesse Mitchell. Here comes a bunch of dumb white guys doing improv, and we were able to win them over. Because a lot of times, I find that that's the most challenging and fun for me, is when you're thrown into a situation where you're not ready for it. You know, and you just have to kind of just do it. And
that's like every one of our external gigs.
Any sort of outside gigs. Yeah, you know, we've these post proms and things like that, where it's like, or we do parties, or we do corporate stuff, or we're like, you know, I do a lot of corporate team building stuff where I'm doing stuff with whether it's CEOs or whether it's superintendents of schools or whatever, when they don't know what you're doing, you know, and you've got to just like just show up and do these characters and stuff like that. So it's interesting, but like improv is, I mean, improv now has come more to the forefront, but a lot of people still don't understand what it is. They think comedy, they think you're doing stand-up.
Yeah, I say a lot, oh yeah, do improv comedy, and they go, oh, like stand-up?
Yeah.
That's the first thing.
To me, what's interesting, going back to the audience thing, is how the audience is so connected with the improv group, and more so than any other art form than music or stand-up specifically. And I've always mentioned it to people, saying that in stand-up you have what I would consider to be a hostile audience. Not to suggest they're throwing things at you, but they're basically saying, okay, funny guy, you had time to work this out. Whereas in improv, they're sympathetic because there's this suspension of disbelief that I can't believe you're going to entertain me without knowing any lines. And to me, that's what I've always really liked, and that's why that audience and troupe, improv troupe connection is like so important, and why you rarely have derails or anything like that. Because everybody's on your side. You can tell the whole audience, whenever there's that one drunk guy, you can just see the audience like looking at the drunk guy like shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
You know? You can see they want him to be kicked out, or her, or whoever causing trouble.
Yeah. It's going to happen, I guess, from time to time. But sometimes, like you said, you guys got to roll with it. That's pretty cool.
That's part of the adventure of it, too, and I think what attracts us to it is you never know what's going to happen. Because that drunk guy's going to show up at some point.
We had him last weekend.
You did?
We had four drunk women. Yeah. Last weekend, which actually
they're the worst.
That's the name of a new improv troupe.
We had a bachelorette party. We were so excited because there were like 30 chicks in the audience, and they all had their little tiaras, and you know, I mean, it was a packed show, and they come in and they're all giggling and fun, and they're all buying drinks, and we're thinking this is going to be a great show. They talked to each other the whole time. And I was like, are you kidding? You know, so we had a great host that night, and she would just, you know, she'd go actually into the audience. She'd put a chair down and like look at them and say, are you done?
Yeah.
And then, you know, and they'd stop for a while. But drunk bachelorette parties. You got to watch out.
We did a bachelorette party once back in the day when we were all handsome and young. And we did it at a bar, in a back room of a bar, and they took Pete's clothes off. Because they wanted a stripper.
They thought it was one of those.
In a moving body scene, they took his clothes off down to his underpants.
Wow.
And he rolled with it.
He did roll with it. And I think he actually stayed after everybody else left.
Did he make any tips?
I'm not sure. I think they said probably don't go to a room where it's cold.
We've done temples, we've done summer camps, we've done retirement homes, and somehow we get laughs each place.
You guys keep it going no matter what, I'll give you credit for that. How about your favorite bits, or I was looking for the right word.
Favorite games and stuff?
Games, yes. Your favorite games that you guys like to do.
I love musicals. I know Rhea and I talked about this before. Yeah. Musical improv is like my favorite.
Yeah.
We do one pretty often. It's just called Space Jump. It's
That's my favorite. Yes.
One audience volunteer comes up, dances for a minute, and then one by one, we stop the scene and make a new scene, adding a different scene each time. And that, to me, is kind of just like rapid-fire theater, where you're going to see six or seven different things twice and then never again. And it involves an audience member. So it's always different. You never know what you're going to get into. A lot of the times the people kind of freeze on stage, and that's kind of fun to play with. But it's really exciting to me when someone gets up here and just hits the ground running and is like guiding us, like telling us what the scene's about. Like I'm in awe, and I love it. Like, it's just like, oh, I don't have to be in like my brain right now. I get to be in your brain, and it's fun to do that with just randoms.
Yeah, there's a game called Musical or Musician's Revenge, or Piano Torture, depending on where you're playing it. But it's a game where you start a scene, and then at any random point, either your keyboardist or your music person just starts playing music, and you have to then start singing the scene. And when they stop playing, you just continue talking as if the singing never happened. That's a lot of fun for me because it's, you know, it's that kind of turn on, turn off. But really anything musical. Mm-hmm.
Is it harder because it's really like improv, so just acting or making a song and trying to rhyme and whatnot?
It is and it isn't. It's harder, but it's so much more rewarding because if you can get people on that journey with you, that it's like adding a level. It's like when they took the donut, you know, the croissant and made it a donut. It's like you have that thing that's already an amazing thing, and then you make it with a croissant, and you're like, yes. That's even better. It's a cronut.
I like cronut.
It is the cronut of improv.
Which I thought was a rapper.
If you watch like any old school Disney movie, all of a sudden out of nowhere, it just turns into I know you.
Right.
People just start singing, and like you grow up being led to believe, oh, everyone in town knows the words to this song randomly. Yeah. And you go through your life never seeing a town break out into song once. And then you come to an improv show where they're doing musical improv, and all of a sudden five people on stage know all the words to this thing that obviously just happened, like based off of a suggestion. And it is kind of magic. Yeah. It's just, how do they do that?
What's your favorite, Steve?
My favorite is... I like Half-Life.
Right. Mm.
Or Compression, I think it's sometimes called. Mm-hmm. Where you do a one-minute scene. Okay. And then you do the exact same scene, word for word, in 30 seconds, 15, 5, and then distill it down to the one beat of that one-minute scene. It just gets more frantic and more fun, and you watch two improvisers decide on the fly what they think the crux of the scene is all about.
Or the cronut, if you will.
Or the cronut.
It's a more challenging game, maybe.
Yeah, well, it gets sillier, and the physicality just, you know, and the speed of it, it gets my heart racing, and I like physical type of improv, so, yeah, it's a fun game.
All right, at this point, I had to let Improv Jam go. They had to go set up for their show. They did a great show Saturday night. I'll share a little clip with you guys in just a little bit. I had a chance to sit down to talk with one of their students from the Improv Jam classes that they're doing, Kevin. He's a tight end for the football team and wanted to try his hand at improv and acting. So just a real quick few minutes with Kevin talking about taking classes with Improv Jam.
All right, we're here with Kevin, Improv Jam student. He is a tight end football player, but he's interested in taking Improv Jam. Kev, nice to meet you. Thanks for coming on. Just basically, why did you want to start acting or performing or doing Improv Jam?
Well, I got into this because I think comedy is like really cool.
Sorry, Kevin. It's all good.
I don't know. I was just always really into it, and then like, I found out like I could actually do it, and I took my first class like over the summer, and I liked it, so I'm just trying to keep doing it.
Awesome, man. And
Why do you think people, or what do you like about the improv classes, and why do you think people should come on out and try their hand at improv?
The classes are cool because you kind of like, kind of learn like how to. I mean, not learn how to do improv, because like, that's not a thing. That
hey man, I can.
You kind of just learn how to like commit to like everything you're doing, and like commit and fail, then like retry, and it's cool and fun.
Awesome, man. I should try that. Hey, I'm a drummer, so...
You're a drummer? That's cool.
I'm a drummer, yeah, but I'm doing the podcast thing, and I've never been an actor or performer, so maybe I should check it out. All right, well, thanks for coming on, Kev. Thanks for a few minutes, man, and good luck with the classes, and hope to see you on some stage.
Yep, thank you.
Thanks, bro. Appreciate it. All right.
All right, a nice couple minutes there with Kevin. He's doing a great job. So I'll share a little clip with you guys from the Improv Jam show from Saturday night. Make sure you go support them. That's the place to be Saturday night. It's a great date night. Get out there right next to the Count Basie Theater on Mama Street. These guys are hilarious. They've been doing it for years. Really talented, funny people. Just such a great night out. Most Saturdays, I think they have a show coming up this Saturday, the 17th. They'll take a little break for the holidays and they'll be back in action in Red Bank in no time. Real quick, before we get to a little clip, I just want to talk about Cooper Groove Drumsticks. You know they're my drumsticks of choice. I've been putting my name behind them for a while now. They are drumsticks with grooves, specially cut into the sticks. Really help improve my grip, great balance. You know, I'm playing, I'm teaching lessons, I'm, you know, balancing the drumsticks on my head while I'm playing because the kids like that, and it's really fun. But they're awesome drumsticks right now. They're running a promotion. You can buy one, get one free by using the code HOLIDAY21OFF at checkout at CooperGroove.com. Performance drumsticks, CooperGroove.com. Check them out. All right, let's take a listen to Improv Jam live in action from Saturday night. I do apologize for the audio quality. You know, I have a limited budget here on the Bob Culture Podcast. But check them out. See them in person. Like I keep saying, it's a great night out. They actually called me on stage for the first game called Space Jump, where I have to dance and act out scenes. And I gave them nothing to work with. And I was completely out of my element because I am by no means an actor or performer. But I do give these guys a lot of credit for keeping things going. It is not easy to be up there and think on your feet. And they are all very talented and very funny. Go see it for yourself. Most Saturday nights, they'll be there. This Saturday, the 17th, I think one of their classes is doing a show before the 9 o'clock show. So you get two shows for the price of one. They'll take a little holiday break, and then they'll be back in action. But Red Bank is the place to be Saturday nights for Improv Jam. Check them out. And people, get out of the house. You know, go to Improv Jam. It's Saturday night. It's going to be a great night. Check it out. They've been entertaining me for years and years and years. All right, so let's take a listen to some Improv Jam.
We're going to do a longer scene called The Scene Three Ways. And we're not going to do music this evening, but we are going to do a literary style and a movie style. But first, we need to have an opening line of dialogue for a normal scene. What's an opening line?
My phone sucks.
My phone sucks is the opening line of dialogue. And a closing line of dialogue to end the scene. How about one of you guys? What's a closing line of dialogue?
I still can't hear you.
What is the closing line? So I still can't hear you. So my phone sucks is the opening line, and the closing line is I still can't hear you. So the first scene is a neutral scene. If that makes sense, and then we'll get two different styles. So you need to think in your mind as you watch the scene. A movie style and a style of literature. Alright, so this is the neutral scene. My phone sucks. I still can't hear you. Seated! 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. My phone sucks, but I mean, you should call her. I mean, call her on it, dude. You don't. And it sucks, but you can totally call her. You can't text because the screen's cracked. But you can call her.
I just don't think I'm ready. Mike, I'm just not ready, man. Just go ahead and call it from someone else's number just so I can hear your voice again.
Too many crickets.
Yes?
You are my, like, mentor, okay?
I know.
You are like my mentor here. We have been working at Chuck E. Cheese for how long?
At least 3 weeks.
Your girlfriend, she can't accept the fact that you are the star of what you got going on here.
the comedian to understand a couple different.
Hey, did he call her yet?
He didn't call her. Even Chucky's concerned. So.
He just started today. You really just gotta call her, man.
You have to tell her. You have to tell her the truth.
Well, what am I gonna tell her? I mean, you guys are the smart ones here.
Tell her you got a new great job and like free pizza.
Yeah.
Benefits.
Okay, because that is Chucky, true.
Chucky runs. Rescue kids from the ball pit.
Yeah. Right.
We're rooting for you, though, man. Like, none of us have girlfriends. We're kind of living through you.
Vicariously, man. Well, how about this? How about you? You guys are the smart ones. Give me your phone. Okay, Mike, give me your phone, and then we'll put it on speaker, right?
All
right. And then you can tell me what to say to her.
All right, good.
Okay.
Good. It'll be like, follow no to follow line.
All right, I gotta work the crowd again. I'll be right back.
Work the crowd.
Oh yeah.
Okay, like, hey, call her. Okay, get on speaker.
God, I wish there were some sound effects on this.
No, it's it like my phone's out.
Okay, put on speaker. Speakerphone. Okay, I'm gonna press dial. I'm gonna dial.
Sometimes it's garbled.
Yeah. Okay.
So you may not.
Yeah. Okay, speaker.
Hello.
Oh, sounds pretty clear.
Sounds pretty clear.
Hello?
What's on mute? Shit. Okay.
Hello? I'm gonna hang up.
Don't hang up, Bay.
Don't hang up, Bay.
I'm sorry. It's really scratchy. I just...
My heart is
scratchy.
Mike, is that you?
Yeah. Mike, yeah, just working, you know?
What?
Just save the kid. Save the kid.
I told you not to call. What? You know, I still can't hear you.
There you go. Now we need two different styles. The style of film, that same scene.
Kung Fu.
Kung Fu! And we need a style of literature. Which is books.
What about pages?
Murder mystery.
What?
A murder mystery.
Murder mystery.
Woo!
So my phone sucks, I still can't hear you. Ready? This is going to be, we'll start off with a little murder mystery. Here we go!
See it! 5, 4, 3, 2, 1!
Hey, Facebook!
What is that? Shh. Stop working these late nights. Enter the cheese. I'm starting to hear things.
My phone sucks! Jesus, oh, did I frighten you?
A little bit.
My phone! It sucks! We cannot hear things because of the storm. The power has been out. And my phone sucks.
Jeez, you scared me. I don't know what to think anymore about you, Mike.
You should not say things about me, Jiminy of the Cricket.
Yes.
All I'm saying to you is my phone does suck. Would you like to try to call her? You should try to call her.
I should.
I
don't
hope you never talk to her again.
Oh, boy, your sleuthing is just... great.
Yeah. Is it?
I don't know. We should try. Where'd you get that monocle?
Oh, something I have. Something I keep.
Okay. Well, just please help me figure out this mystery of...
I would like you to try to call her.
Okay. Let's try.
Would you... Okay.
Whoa. Fell down.
Oh!
Okay.
Now you've done it.
You gotta help me figure this out, though.
Okay.
I'm so nervous and scared. Did I just sense something? I sensed something.
Has he called her?
He has not called her yet.
Why hasn't he called her?
It's Chucky of the Rude Board.
Oh. Maybe she's dead. He can help.
Maybe
she's dead.
Am I the real Chucky?
I'm not sure. There's paintings of different Chuckies everywhere.
Everywhere!
How could a one Chucky be in so many places? Have you ever thought about that?
Hey, did you call your girlfriend? He's trying to. He doesn't understand.
Why haven't you called her?
I need your help giving me the words to say to her through Mike's phone.
Say, come to Chuck E. Cheese's.
Now, in this store, impending doom shall not happen.
She's on speakerphone.
Don't give her a real reason, though.
No, just leave her open. Be vague.
Say you need her.
Oh, I didn't call her yet.
Well,
there we go.
Do it right, because women are a mystery to me.
They are. They are a mystery.
I'm going to go kill someone.
All right.
Is he really going to go kill someone?
We won't find out till later. Wait, so when did you do that?
No, your voice
My phone does suck, but you don't have to do the.
Oh!
It'll make it so great.
Well, it's going to voicemail.
It is. But call
what
it.
What should I say?
Call it. Because.
Oh, gee, Scooby phone!
Scooby Doo?
Hey, who's that?
What should I do?
Well, you should first start off with offering some sort of food based.
Would you like pepper steak?
Pepper steak? You offer pepper steak? Shut down!
Oh, are you crazy? Yes. I'm crazy in love. And I'm never gonna solve this mystery of the murder of my soul.
Call back. Don't offer pepper steak. Let me do the talking.
Okay.
Okay?
But why don't you just call it? What the hell am I holding on to it for?
Hello? Jiminy's girlfriend!
Help me! Is somebody there?
Hello!
What? What are your coordinates?
I can't hear you.
Yeah. All right, now we're good.
Come on, move!
See
it! 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
To our face.
Welcome to our face.